Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event. Fight fans worldwide, you've tuned into the number one undisputed boxing podcast today. This is the Boxing Breakdown. Now, your heavy-handed, hard-hitting host, Mark Roxey.
What's up, what's up, what's up? How's everybody doing out there in the Boxing Breakdown land? This is your host, Mark Roxey, and I am here today with my partner in crime, Mr. Harold Hunt. We have been in a, I would call it a techno experiment of turning the Boxing Breakdown into a visual feast for the eyes. We will be bringing the Boxing Breakdown to YouTube very, very soon. We are working out a little bit of the glitches, and we are so excited to announce that. Unfortunately, I am also going to comment very, very briefly on the passing of DMX, who is a absolute amazing rapper from the 90s and 2000s, and just we grew up with his anthems and his music, and he will be terribly missed. It seems like every time we get on this podcast, there's someone else who passes away, and it's just, we're losing so many people, and so our sincere condolences go out to the family of DMX, and I'd like to like you all to join me in welcoming into the studio Mr. Harold Hunt. What's up, what's up, what's up?
What's up, what's up, what's up?
How you doing, my brother?
Hey, I'm great, man. I'm glad to be on again, man.
Yeah.
And just to continue quickly about DMX, a wonderful artist. I enjoyed his music, but he was an excellent actor. The movie that comes to mind is Belly. He was excellent in that movie as an antagonist. And he did a movie with Steven Seagal, which was really good. So he was very versatile.
Oh, man. He wasn't only versatile, but that raspy voice, man, that Lord, give me a sign, that just that voice that he had when he sang and rapped. It just is a really, really terrible loss. And, you know, how many boxers out there just absolutely not only love his music, but have used his music on their ring entrances for fights, you know, it just... countless, you know. So, yeah, man, it just he will really be missed. And so what I want to do, Harold, I know you got some things on your mind. I know we're here to talk about some specific fire in the 147 pound weight division out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Philly in the house.
That's right. Philly is in the house, and quite possibly one of the best, if not the best, welterweight to ever be produced out of Philadelphia. That's obviously arguable, but certainly if you are studying the film and you know who I'm talking about, you would agree that Mr. Jerron Ennis is the talk of the town, the belle of the ball, the man of the hour, putting on another wonderful, wonderful display a couple of, I think it was a week ago, right?
Yes, this past weekend.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Did you get a chance to see that fight?
Yes, I did.
Talk to me.
It was great. It was great. What I could initially, just on the ring interest and his attitude and the attitude of Lipnitz, if I pronounce that correctly, it was not to be a walkover fight at all. Mr. Ennis really knows how to fight on the inside and the outside, but he switches at will. What was really great for me to see is while he's switching, he's not getting stuck in the middle. He switches really easily when needed. So that was pretty impressive. But he really dominated, and he did really well. However, he did get hit. He was hit more than I've ever seen him hit. So they've got a lot. They've got some things to work on. But he did take some blows that he didn't see coming. His skill set allowed his opponent to hit him with some stuff that he hadn't seen. But that's just a great learning process for him, because we saw Thurman get hit by Pacquiao, and you know his skill set is up there. So you can be hit. So that was good for him to see that, and he just dominated. So his footwork was great, hand speed was great, ring generalship was great, his attitude was great. And when he knocked the man down, he wasn't excited, he wasn't overblown. He knew that that's what he had to do. He needed to do that for his situation to be positive, and he did so. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you just said. I think it's important to illustrate here that we're talking specifically about the performance that took place at the Mohican Sun in Montville, Connecticut on April 10th, 2021. And we're specifically speaking about Sergei Lipinets, who is a really incredible fighter. Definitely a come forward fighter. And, you know, as far as matchmaking is concerned, I feel like he was kind of tailor-made for Jaron Ennis, just the way that he, you know, came forward. It was a step-up fight for Mr. Ennis, but it also, in many respects, seemed like just another day in the office for Jaron Ennis. And, you know, he was able to score a knockdown. I believe it was in the sixth round, sixth of a scheduled 12, roughly at 2 minutes and 11 seconds into the fight. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to touch on what you said specifically, you know, yeah, he did get hit a little bit, but if you go back and look at the film, I mean, I haven't looked at it twice, but I did, you know, pay attention to a lot of the roles. You know, one of the things that Jaron Ennis does really, really well is his ability to slip, duck, dive, and really roll punches. His defense is exceptional. And the person who comes to mind, and I know that others have said this as well, this is not a new idea, a new thought, but I certainly, I compare him to Sweepy Whitaker in the way in which he fights on the southpaw side. Southpaw side, you can really see the slips and the bobs and he did some fantastic defense in there. So, and some of those shots that look like they were landing were actually rolling. He has a really interesting way of, if he can't slip the punch, if he can't duck roll the punch, if he can't pull back, you know, using his legs, he just has a way of rolling and those punches just glaze right off of him. And then occasionally he'll use the shoulder roll. You'll see the Philly shell come into play in the fight. And I mean, he's just using so many things. It just appears to me that this is a gentleman who lives in the gym, that his life, he eats, breathes, sleeps, boxing, in a way that most don't. What do you think?
Yes, I agree with that. He did roll away from some punches very nicely. I was able to see that he was just going with the flow or what have you. There were a few that he wasn't able to do, and he was hit pretty clean. But that's something that you have to work on. But yes, the defense was great. It was smooth. I didn't see any weaknesses in the inside work or the outside work. He stayed, you know, in the ring where he wanted to be at all times. He was never threatened. When his opponent came toward him, you know, he did what he needed to do to either get out the way or stop that aggression. I mean, he showed everything in my mind. And, you know, he showed a chin. He showed that he could take a punch. Because I've seen his other fights, and no one's ever really, you know, hit him or you know, followed up with a couple of punches on him where he had to, you know, recover or, you know, get out the way. So this is the first time I've seen him actually have to fight a little bit. And it was great. It was great to see that. So I'm very happy for him. I am so happy for him because now it's going to force these other guys to do something, to address something. I mean, their promoters and their handlers. Because there's another kid on the block now, and the public's going to be asking, well, why not him? Since you don't want to go elsewhere. But that's a whole other subject. But his skill set was great, and I was impressed.
Yeah.
I was just going to say,
Harold, that, you know, his skill sets are absolutely incredible. I would love to see Jerron Ennis, obviously, against, you know, tougher opposition. I'm sure the handlers and the team will be looking at who that might be. And I think that this fight really opened up the conversation and put his name in a conversation of a lot of, fighters at a higher level or, you know, in terms of their career anyway. And I think that it's important to note that right now, Jerron Ennis has 27 bouts with zero losses and zero draws. He has 25 of those wins have come by way of knockout, man. He's got almost a 90% knockout ratio. So, you know, he's right there. You hear me, Harold?
Yes, every word. He is right there. He's right there. And he's what, 23, right? And Earl is 31, and Bud is 33. So he's got tons of time to get so much better. So much better. So we have to see if they're going to actually entertain fighting him. I just don't know.
Yeah, man. I mean, so check. I mean, look, he's, as far as the WBC is concerned, he doesn't have that much time, Harold. He's ranked number 12 in the WBC. So, you know, I mean, how much more time does he need? As ranked number 12, the people who are ranked in front of him, let's do this, Harold. Let's go from the top of the WBC. Let's just look at the WBC rankings right now. You got Errol Spence as the kingpin there, right? Holding the belt. He's the champion. You got Sean Porter listed as number one. Mikey Garcia listed at number two. Keith one-time Thurman at number three, Virgil Ortiz at number four, Danny Garcia at number five, who's also from Philadelphia. And then you've got, you know, some other guys who are listed there at number six, seven, eight. You got Josecito Lopez at number nine, Amir Khan at number 10, Kell Brook at 11, and then there you go. You got Jerron Ennis at number 12. So, I mean, when you really look at it, I mean, okay, Jerron Ennis against Kell Brook. Thoughts?
Yeah.
Okay. Never mind. Jerron Ennis against Amir Khan. Thoughts? Chiron Ennis against Josecito Lopez. Thoughts?
That's better.
Not much. All right, let's just jump ahead. All right, now this is a fight that I know could be made. Well, maybe it could be made, but boy, would I love to see Chiron Ennis against Danny Garcia. Talk to me about that fight right there.
Yes, that would be a great fight, not only for the Philadelphia area, but for that entire skill set that Danny has. Now, I'm sure he sparred with Ennis previously. They're all in Philadelphia together. Kareem is in the ring with Kareem at one time or another. So that would be something that would be very interesting. As far as styles are concerned, he'll probably treat Danny like Earl treated Danny. He has the skill set to treat Danny like that.
Well, I mean, okay. So for me, I don't really know what to say except that if Chiron Ennis and Danny Garcia meet, that's going to be quite a match. I mean, if you were to compare, I mean, you really can't compare. We got to just see that fight. I mean, I can go and be a broadcaster that gets to throw a lot of things around and say a lot of things about these guys. But what we know is that both of those guys are true warriors. Danny Garcia's record is 36 wins and 3 losses, 21 wins coming by way of KO. He is ranked ahead of Chiron Ennis. He's ranked at number 5. He is out of Philadelphia. You know, Chiron Ennis has the reach on him by 2 inches with a reach of 5. Actually, his height is 5'10" and his reach is 74 inches. Danny Garcia is 5'8". His reach is 68.5. So that would be, if you're looking at it on paper, Chiron Ennis has more knockouts than Danny Garcia. Danny Garcia has more ring experience slightly. Well, at least professional ring experience. And that could be a really, really great fight. Swift against Boots. So, I would love to see that. I mean, Danny Garcia certainly knows how to work in the close range. I think that he would give Boots some trouble up close. But then again, with Boots being able to switch from conventional, back and forth, southpaw to conventional, it could give Danny Garcia a lot of problems. So it's a faster fight, wouldn't you say?
Yes. And Boots has power because his opponent was blocking a lot of those punches, but that power was coming through anyway. It was coming through the guard. It was coming through, his guard. It simply was. It was clubbing. It was fast. It was powerful. It was clubbing. It was penetrating.
Right.
That's how I can put it. So, it's kind of like the type that hit you with your guard, or you still were hurt. You still had the bruise because, the power went through the glove. So, I see that with him. So, I just really see him winning against Danny. Man, I hope, no offense, but I think he would prevail over Danny, even at this stage of his development.
Right. Well, so then that switches gears. That moves us into the discussion of the the IBF. Because if you look at the IBF, Chiron Ennis Boots is ranked at number 9. In the IBF. So ahead of him, you got Rashid Ellis is right underneath him. So, and Rashid Ellis is also ranked number 14 in the WBC. So I'm not sure if that could be a fight that they would make, but ahead of Jerron Ennis, you know, at the very, very top, you've got Sergey Lipinets, who's there at number three. I guess this is an old ranking, so he must be ranked at number three because he just beat Lipinets. And that means that he would be in pole position for potentially a fight with Errol Spence. Does that even add up at all?
Well, that's what it looks like on paper there.
Yeah, on paper.
Nice sprinkle a little there.
Yeah, man. And
it's going to look different.
And the WBO, let's go to the WBO. In the WBO, you've got, the guys underneath him are not, you know, it's just a different, it's a different class. I mean, honestly, it's a different class, but you've got, at least in my opinion, I mean, so that's arguable and I get it. And no disrespect to anybody in the WBO that are ranked, that's ranked in the WBO under number seven. But, right at the top of the list is where it gets real interesting. Cause you've got the top four fighters are going to be at the very, very top. It's Terrence Crawford as the champion. Ranked number one is Sean Porter again. There he goes again. And Virgil Ortiz is ranked number two. And then Mikey Garcia is ranked number three. So you got something else. There's another look right there. I mean, Jerron Ennis against Virgil Ortiz. What about that? Talk to me about that fight.
Now, that would be a good fight. They are both young, up and coming. They both have a great skill set. Ortiz can sell tickets at the time. Booth can't, not yet. As far as in the ring, that would be a good fight. That would remind me, if I may go back to a prime Miller and a prime Herman, where they're young enough and smart enough to give us a great fight.
Yeah.
And these two really do it'll be a great fight. Now, I can't even pick who, I can't pick.
Well,
I really can't.
If my memory serves me correct, Harold, doesn't Virgil Ortiz also switch back and forth? Southpaw conventional?
I can't say I remember that, but if you say so and you've seen it, I believe you. If he does, that would be really a chess power chess match. Because I mean, they both have power.
Yeah, man. After Virgil Ortiz's last performance, anything is possible right there. You know, and he is being trained on that, on the Canelo team, you know, that whole team there that just can't. You know, it's the golden team. So I don't really know if that would be a fight that the handlers and the management of Jerron Ennis would actually consider making. But boy, you know, Virgil Ortiz is there. You know, he's ranked number four by the WBC and again ranked number two by the WBO. So he's there. He's there in both of those rankings, and eventually, you know, these guys are all running the race to grab the straps. You know, so eventually these guys are going to meet, and I actually think, I think that it would be great to see a Danny Garcia against Boots, and I'm getting this notion in my head, the more and more I think about it, what a great promotion that would be. Right. For those of you that are in Philly, you know, promoters out there that are in Philly, whoever, might be able to make this kind of fight happen. It's definitely, you know, it sounds like it could be a pay-per-view. It sounds like it could be a big money fight. You know, gosh, definitely at the Leocor Center for sure. And it could be, you know, with lots of audience, you know, I guess if everybody's vaccinated, Harold.
Right. Well, I don't know if Danny would take that fight.
Tell me why. Why do you think he won't take it?
There's no need for him to go back. He's taking a chance. If he loses to this gentleman at this point in his career, he's undone some of the work he's done. Of course, Bruce will take the fight.
Oh, yeah.
But Danny will take that fight now because he's got bigger fish to fry. He's got to get himself back to contention. And if he loses, he loses a lot. If he wins, he doesn't really gain that much. Boots can take a loss at this time and still end up in the Hall of Fame or the greatest welterweight in the world. But Danny's time is short. He just lost the fight.
Right.
In position, he can continue to move forward. Taking the Boots fight would not be would not be conducive to his career at this time. Yes, it's tasty and sexy for us to talk about it, but it's not a good idea, in my opinion, for his career at this time.
Right. Well, that's valuable insight there. Hopefully, Jerron Ennis is listening in, and I'm sure he'll take your advice to heart. I think the future is definitely bright for him, man. His let's talk about his skills. Let's talk about some of the skills that Jerron Ennis possesses specifically. And let's start with the hands. Let's start with the punches. What do you see as his most valuable weapon?
Well, his jab sets up everything like any good fighter. But it's not a probing type jab. It's not a heavy jab where it's to knock you back or knock you out or hurt you. It's stunning to the point where you have to take note of it, and it's coming pretty hard. But I just like the fact that it's very consistent. Is straight, and he's got a nice torque on it. So at any time, that jab's going to come out, and it's going to make a statement, whether he's retreating or going forward. So the most consistent thing to me about his style that I enjoy is when that jab comes out in all the situations that he has to go through during the fight. So I like his jab.
Yeah,
on either side. Both of them, either side, they come out the same way, the same consistency.
Yeah, I feel like he's really strong on the southpaw side, and the jab, as you mentioned, is a beautiful jab, and he throws it in a lot of different ways. He probes with the jab. He sticks it hard when he needs to. He up jabs. He puts angles on the jab. And really, the thing that I like most about his jab is that he really lets his body weight go with it. You know, like his body weight is always relaxed, but yet it's always right there with that jab. And it's really a beautiful weapon. And as you mentioned, he does set things up with it. I really like his jab. But I also, one of the things that fascinates me is how he uses the uppercuts. His uppercuts are real sneaky. And those uppercuts get a lot of times, if you go back and look at a lot of his fights, the uppercut will get his opponent in trouble, right? That uppercut will put you in trouble if he connects with it. So the uppercut is the next punch that I was very, very impressed with, particularly when, he's facing a guy like Lippi Nyets, who you could say kind of mimics Danny Garcia and Virgil Ortiz. Like, if you were looking for a sparring partner, that would be, no disrespect to Lippi Nyets, great fighter, but that would be the sparring partner you'd call in if you were going to fight a Virgil Ortiz or even a Sean Porter. That you would bring that kind of a sparring partner in simply because he's coming into your basket. He's coming right up the center. There's not a lot of angle to what he's doing, and that uppercut really proved to be valuable there, would you say?
Yes. Yes, I agree with that totally. It's well placed, and he places it at the right time, and doesn't even throw over when he throws it. He doesn't throw it from afar. It's pretty sudden. It's very compact and very clean. Yes.
Yeah, and what do you think about his body work, Harold?
Well, the rule of thumb is, you know, a combination to the body. You know, he goes to both sides. The combination left to the right, you know. He'll dig when he has to get out of there. And he has everything. I even saw a solar plex punch, you know.
Yeah, from the southpaw side, the left hand straight to the chest.
Right. And, you know, that is an educated, boxing IQ to do that. So he's got it. And he's got, you know, the downstairs cachet. He can work that body.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've seen, I think in the Juan Carlos Abreu fight that he had back in 2020, September 19th of 2020, he fought Juan Carlos Abreu, and he hit him with a straight left hand to the solar plexus, and he turned over the hook, his right hook on the southpaw side, and he clipped him. It's like radar. So that brings me to the hook. His hook is outstanding too. I mean, the hook is just as good as a straight right hand. Would you agree?
Yes. Yes, because he gets you, it's right in the power range. It's delivered inside the power range.
Yeah.
So he's close enough where he needs to be, so he can get out if he needs to, but he can deliver it right in that range of power, right in that torque range. And, you know, that's a powerful thing. That was what was kind of knocking this net off of his axis a lot of times. The hook wasn't landing flush, but it was landing on his glove and it was just moving him. It was just shaking him.
Yeah, those are what we call exit shots. Exit, nice placed exit shots. I was just sitting here thinking about the matchup, like if and when he ever locks horns with Mr. Sean Porter, the gatekeeper there, I'm not sure how he would fare switching and fighting at close range or even mid range for that matter with the likes of a Sean Porter who really gives you a lot of angles left and right, up and down, you know, in and out. He's not an easy fighter for someone like Boots. I'm not sure that that's necessarily an easy fight. What do you think about that?
Yes, yes. Beautiful. You made my mouth water with that one. Look, in my opinion, Porter is going to force him to do some things that we haven't seen him do yet. We don't know what he's going to do with this kind of pressure, with this kind of chin coming at him, with this type of ferocity and disregard for, you know, him as a prospect or anything like that. Sean Porter comes to take everybody out. Doesn't matter. So that fight really catch my interest over the Garcia fight because I see him beating Garcia. But with this fight here, that would be a good fight. Now, for him to go to the body and do all those different things when he's on his back foot or he's trying to step around Sean or he's playing the matador with Sean, that would be great to see if he can actually do that at this point in his career. Now, so yeah, that if I need to see a fight with him next, that's the one I would like. Because that fight will really be a litmus test to his skill set.
Well,
because with Sean, you know, it's life or death.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It is. And just as a note of interest, a fight with Sean Porter would put him if he could dispense of Sean Porter, he would be basically the you know, number one in line as the number one contender. So in the WBC and the WBO, you know, he would basically be right there, you know? So that's interesting. Very, very interesting.
Sean's not going to take that fight either.
Sean, listen, the one thing, maybe I'm incorrect in stating this, but the one thing that I know from watching Sean Porter's career, knowing a little bit about him, Sean Porter will fight anybody you put in front of him. He's not going to duck and dive a fight with anybody coming up or anybody at the top, you know, looking to make a good quality fight. And I think the fans, the one thing about Sean Porter is that the fans love him. Whenever this guy fights, the fans show up. So, you know, you make a fight with Sean Porter, that's a big fight, you know? Errol Spence, Sean Porter, you know, I don't know what about that. I mean, what about that?
You mean Errol Spence and Boots?
Yeah, yeah. Errol Spence and Boots. Sorry, I said Sean Porter. Pardon me.
Well, we know Errol Spence is pretty basic. He's a, you know, jab, jab, I'm going to drop your right hand. But he's tenacious with that. He's going to continue to put the combinations on that lock until that lock opens. And that's jab, jab, right hand, you know, jab, jab, right hook, jab, jab, left hook, right, whatever. It's pretty clean and basic what he's going to do. But he just beats you up with it.
For sure.
He keeps trying. Yeah, basic, and he beats you up. So we know that's what he's going to bring to, you know, young Boots. Now, if Boots can get Earl on his back foot or move him around the ring, I would love to see that. Well, that is something that I don't really think he's ready for as of now. He has to have something. He has to get through Sean Porter first before he can even go there. But that would be a good fight. That would be a good fight, but I don't want to see that now because, you know, no offense, I don't want Boots to have heartbroken now because he can get thrown in there kind of early. Now, we know Canelo did, and his heart wasn't broken. I just would not like to see that fight. But I'm throwing out my thoughts, and like you said, I still see Earl prevailing in that fight just because he's going to simply just walk you down no matter what you do as far as, you know, the body work and the nice jabs and feints and all of that. He's going to take those things and he's going to deliver his work. He's going to deliver his work. He's never going to take a step back or whatever. He's going to deliver his work. So that would be a good fight.
Really?
You throw out all the political stuff and all who could sell tickets and all that. And
yeah.
You go straight to boxing. That would be a great fight.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not sure that Jerron Ennis is quite ready for the likes of Errol Spence or Terrence Crawford, for that matter. I don't know about those that level of a fight, but certainly being able to get a big money fight, being able to actually get a fight at the upper echelon against the likes of, you know, any of the guys in the top 10, you know, or the top 5. I'm sure they're gunning for guys in the top 5, but, you know, Danny Garcia, Virgil Ortiz, Keith Thurman, Mikey Garcia, Sean Porter, Errol Spence, any of those guys are certainly worth, you know, watching, must-see TV. Terrence Crawford, boy, you know, I just need to see him fight. But this podcast is really about Jerron Ennis and what, you know, what is possible for him as we watch him climb the ranks. So do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Well, I look like this way. We have to see more of him. So We get to see more of him. We get to look at him and see him fight several fights. Then we have more information and we can look at those top fighters you spoke of earlier and we compare notes a little better. But right now, we've only seen so much of him. So as of now, yeah, we say he can't handle those other two guys possibly right now. That's because we haven't seen enough of him. So once we see maybe three or four more fights, then we can really make a clear estimation on how he would really do against, you know, the Errol Spencers and this other guy. But right now, we don't have just enough data. But going forward, you know, I think he's great. He's articulate. His brothers were fighters. They were ranked in the organization also. So he's disciplined. So he's got everything I can think of. He does have a legal problem right now with his contract with his current manager, but that'll be eventually hashed out in the courts, and he'll be able to move forward.
Are you specifically speaking of Jerron Ennis?
Yes.
Wow, I wasn't aware of that. Please do tell, and please do. I'm sure the fans of the Boxing Breakdown would really love to know a little bit about that because I wasn't really up to speed on the legal entanglement. Talk to us.
Well, the detail is very, it's not something that's going to be broadcasted line for line and what have you. But there is a situation where it is just a simple situation that I've basically understood, just a contract dispute. And because of that, there's a legal proceeding going on. It's not stopping from fighting. It's not stopping from being matched. It's just some of the funds that are garnered from his work. The splits are in question.
So it's just about the splits.
It's financial, somewhat. So if it was any type of the contract, he wouldn't be fighting. He wouldn't have matches. He wouldn't be working. So because that would, you know, you can't fight until that's taken care of. So it's not on that side of things. That's all I really know. It's not stopping from fighting. It's just a financial thing when the person's come down, who gets what, that type of thing.
Right.
And then that's all it is. But as I said previously, you know, that'll be worked out. And just to go back to my point, you know, he's a professional. His brothers were ranked in, you know, the WBC, the WBA, and so he just has it all, man. So I'm really, really looking forward to him. I remember, Mark, about maybe 3 or 4 months ago, I texted you and I said, "This guy is the truth," and you said, "Yes, he is." And this was months ago.
Oh yeah. I've been following Boots for years, you know, and because yes. I'm from the Philly area, Philadelphia yes. area. So, you know, I've been following Boots. I know very much about him and his work and he's definitely an exceptional fighter, has always been an exceptional fighter. And he was born in 1997, so he's not that old. He's not, you know.
22.
Yeah, he's 22. Exactly. And, you know, he had an extensive amateur career, and he lives in the gym. And, you know, if you ask anybody in Philly, right, who is the most technically intelligent, best fighter, right, most people today are going to say Jerron Boots Ennis. So he is the talk of the town, literally, and for a very, very good reason, as you saw in his last performance against Sergei Lipinets. It's unfortunate that there is a legal entanglement there, and I'm assuming that that's probably why we haven't seen too much of him as much as we would like to see of him because of that mess. But, you know, hopefully they'll work that out. If it's just about percentages, I'm sure, you know, everybody, you know, they can come to some sort of resolution that would make everybody happy. And because that's what it's about. Do not slow this guy down, though, because he's, you know, he's got a lot to offer the boxing world, a lot to offer the fans, the casual fans, as well as the you know, the very, very in-depth analyst of the sport, because he's remarkable in the ring, and we just wish him luck and, you know, everything that should come to pass for him, for our future champion, because I do believe, and you've heard it right here on the Boxing Breakdown, that Jaron Buttenis will be a world champion. It's not if, it's more like when. So, yeah. What do you think, Harold? You agree with that statement?
It's when, not if. It's when. Because those guys are, they're gonna have their run. They're going to move out. And then he'll be there. Whether he puts them out or they leave before he gets there, and he'll be a long-running champion. Just because he won't have a problem with southpaws. He won't have a problem with right-handers. He's not going to have a problem with bullies. He's not going to have a problem with cuties. He'll reign for a long time.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that you are absolutely correct. I hope that those of you that are listening out there have enjoyed our conversation around boots, Jaron Ennis boots. And I hope that you will tune in to the next episode of the Boxing Breakdown. And also, do not forget to share the podcast with friends and colleagues in the boxing community. We really appreciate your support. Help us get the podcast listened to by a larger audience. We would really love that. And with that, Harold, I want to thank you for being on the program. As always, your conversations are illuminating. They're great. I always look forward to the time when we can just chop it up and break down some boxing.
Yes, I love it.
All right, brother. Well, until next time, I'm your host, Mark Roxy, and on behalf of Harold Hunt and everyone at the Boxing Breakdown, peace, love, and we are out.
Out.
Fight fans, join host Mark Roxy and special guests as they break down all aspects of the boxing world, including news, business, management, training, promotions, fan reactions, upcoming events, matchups, future boxing stars, title fights, state of the boxing world, and all the stuff you don't see when you watch boxing. This podcast is released each week on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Live streamed on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook Live. It's the Boxing Breakdown, hosted by Mark Roxy.